Hello, hi, and a warm welcome to the Samadhi Podcast, a series of short talks and guided meditations that help you become a happier, more peaceful, and positive person. Learn how to calm the mind, deeply relax, gain control of feelings and emotions, and let go of stress and anxiety. Today on the podcast, I have with me a very special guest, healer, therapeutic counselor, and meditation guide, Charlotte Adler of Bodhicitta Lifeworks. Good morning, Charlotte.
Good morning, David. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, having worked as an artist in London for over 20 years, Charlotte Adler writes that it has been her honor and privilege to practice as a healer and therapeutic counselor for the last 13 years, helping women to deal with all aspects of recovery in the aftermath of addiction and trauma. Extensive studies in Buddhist psychology, plus time spent in northern India, practicing both yoga and meditation, has led her to a current position, offering, with the greatest joy, accessible Dharma workshops and guided meditations to retreatants at all levels of study and practice. So, Charlotte, it was really by chance that we actually met here.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, very crazy. So we're both living in a town called Arcos de la Frontera in Cadiz, in the Andalusian region in the south of Spain. And it's a relatively large town, but it's not one popular with expats at all, is it? There's barely any British people here. I think I only know of one or two more here. Mm. And so one day we were both in the vets at the exact same day, the exact same time, with our two pets. My pet actually, I think, was probably faking an illness because he recovered miraculously over 24 hours and there was nothing wrong with him. That's what a crazy chance.
Yeah, extraordinary. And I was there with my enormous 6-month-old puppy, Joe, just for normal inoculations and so forth. And I hear this lovely English voice and speak to David, and we, lo and behold, we're both Buddhist practitioners. I mean, the odds were extraordinary. Yes. And a kindred spirit, clearly.
Absolutely, yeah. What are the chances? So I'm very grateful to you for coming onto the podcast this morning. I really want to take this opportunity to learn more from you. You have a wealth of knowledge and experience. And so, yeah, really, really grateful for you to come onto the podcast this morning. So to begin, I guess I'd like to ask you, why meditation? Why Buddhism? What brought you to it?
Well, David, I am coming up 15 years in my own recovery from alcohol and drugs. And within that process, within the last 15 years, I have found many of the spiritual practices, all of the spiritual practices, seem to have systems within them. And the system of recovery I've worked with has been the 12-step process. I've worked with my sponsor and to sponsor other women through their process of recovery from addiction. And within that, Buddhism, I then met and spent a lot of time with somebody who was a Buddhist monk. He is now working in the world. He disrobed, but he was a Buddhist monk working in northern Thailand, and specifically working in a monastery called Thangkrabok, which is a detox monastery. And he gave me an introduction to Buddhism, and I took the reins and ran with it. It's something I fell in love with, and it works so closely with healing craving. We were going to talk a bit today about the hungry ghost, the realm of Buddhist psychology, which is about the hungry ghost was a depiction of a psychic realm, ancient, the Buddhist depictions of these, and the hungry ghosts depict craving. They depict the epitome of the most hardcore of attachment, which causes dukkha inevitably, and they are depicted with long necks, tiny little heads, swollen, extended stomachs, and they are everywhere. They're within us. This is what I became interested in, how meditation and mindfulness can help with craving of all sorts, with attachment. And then I became interested in a process called RAIN, which we were going to talk about a bit later today.
Yes. And so one of the things that you, well, along what you were just saying, one of the things that you focused on in your career is healing trauma with meditation. I wonder if you could just talk about that.
Yes, certainly.
What's meditation's role in trauma?
Well, with trauma, we work from the limbic part of the brain. So in trauma comes inevitably the fight, flight, freeze, which is the limbic brain in full gear. And meditation, if we can bring mindfulness to it, there is a way to slow down the brain, to come away from what is known. I was thinking earlier today, there's a wonderful psychologist, McDonald, who talks about the fear brain and the learning brain. And the learning brain is when we can slow down the limbic system and work with a part of the brain which is calmer, more peaceful, which is open to new ideas of moving forward peacefully in one's life, rather than being stuck in fear, projection, in dukkha, in suffering. And so with the meditation we can do, I mean, it's been proven time and time again that there were some scientific tests done recently where they had a row of non-meditators and they made, sitting there quietly, they made loud noise suddenly behind them. They were measuring the brain patterns and they were up and down all over the place. Then they had a group of people who meditated regularly, same process, same loud noise, brain patterns were completely still.
Wow.
So this works with trauma, and obviously a lot of people I work with who have come from very dark places, of great danger, very often as people in active addiction, there is such a moral judgment made with people, I have found in my experience, or there can be moral judgments made of people who are very ill. The places people come from within their time spent in active addiction are often very dark places. And they will arrive into recovery with PTSD, with post-traumatic stress disorder, very often. And this can go unrecognized. And some of the work I do has been gratefully received because mindfulness and meditation helps. It's a very practical solution. So without... And it lessens the need, and there is often great need, but it does lessen sometimes the need for unnecessary medication with chemicals.
Yes, because this is something that is very much overly used in psychiatry to treat all sorts of conditions, but especially something that I've seen is people with low-level depression are often just given antidepressants to solve that problem. Mm. But it's not very often that we look to the cause. Most often we just want to suppress the symptoms.
Yes.
Or at least in the psychiatric world, that seems to be the focus. So do you think that there is a lack of meditation and mindfulness in the mental health and addictions world?
I think the awareness is increasing, mm-hmm. for the necessity for it. They're teaching meditation in schools and prisons with great effect. So fingers crossed, it is increasing. And intuitively, what springs to mind for me in this conversation is and I have said this over the years many, many times, it is not for me to tell people to come off, to tell people that whether they need to come off medication or be on it. It is simply my experience that I have seen people bring down their medication under medical instruction with the help of meditation and mindfulness. I try, when I have private clients, I work for a practice mainly, but with my private clients, I try to use a twofold approach, which is to try to decrease medication with the aim of coming off it, alongside teaching meditation, teaching Dharma, and see how it works. It's experimental. I wouldn't Absolutely. Dream of taking somebody suddenly off their medication and saying meditation is a miraculous cure-all. It would be extremely irresponsible and dangerous. I like them to work alongside. But I have seen miraculous results with... And also, what sprang to mind was the three refuge, the true refuges... and false refuge. And if that's something we could talk about, may I talk a little bit about that? The Buddha, in Buddhism, we talk about the three refuges as the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So we have, if you will, the teacher, the teachings, and fellowship. And in our society now, community has broken down to a large extent. That has often been a huge problem. People feel isolated, and then they can turn to false refuge, which is anything. Basically, a false refuge in Buddhist teaching is something that we think will fix us, but that doesn't. So we've all done it. We're having a miserable day. We'll think, okay, I'm going to go off and buy a pair of shoes, and suddenly my life will be wonderful if their shoes are good enough. Or I'm going to eat this fabulous walnut cake and two tubs of Haagen-Dazs. And momentarily, it might feel fabulous, or a bottle of Valium or hard drugs, whatever it is. And it doesn't work. It is simple as that. It doesn't work. So the true refuges, if we can guide, if we can be guided and to guide towards the true refuges, the three true refuges. And again, the teachers and the teachings I have found in many different areas. We've talked a lot, David, about the Vipassana movement that came from the East to the West in the 70s, with people like Jack Kornfield, Ram Dass, Sharon Salzberg, all of these people, and they brought it to the West when it was so desperately needed.
Absolutely. And so I think it would be nice now if you could provide us with an introduction to RAIN. What's the purpose of RAIN, and how do we apply it mindfully into our daily lives?
Yes, I'd be delighted. Now, RAIN is an acronym for a system that can help us to come away from what is known as trance thinking. It's when we get stuck into cyclical thinking, which can spiral down and towards depression, all these sorts of things. It is a method of mindfulness, if you will, that was devised 20 years ago by a Buddhist psychologist, or maybe she was just a psychologist, whoever, called Michelle McDonald. And not just a psychologist, that's very rude. Maybe she was a psychologist and it has been incorporated into Buddhism. Apologies, Michelle McDonald. And it has then been... I was thinking this morning, I really love the way that the Dharma evolves through various teachers and teachings. So I've had friends of mine who said, oh, I feel awful, I've just completely plagiarized a teacher or borrowed a whole load of stuff. It does it. And actually, when I spoke to, or a friend of mine spoke to his teacher, the teacher said, who's very well known, teacher said, listen, don't worry, I did it from all mine. Every Ajahn I've ever met, I've nicked their stuff. So, but how it's evolved is interesting. I will mention it when I come to the end of it, how that particularly the ending has evolved. So basically, RAIN is it focuses on the process of using this acronym for the dynamics of trance. So where we are, we all come from family conditioning. Well, there are many ways that we get conditioned as we go through life, and we start to believe stories about ourselves, and they really impact how we see the world, how we our relationships with other people. It all starts from self. So when we're doing metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, we will always start with self. Now, people who are not terribly aware of how this works will often say, but this is so selfish, we shouldn't start with self. Unless we start with self, our batteries are too low. I had a flat battery in my car this morning, so it's all about flat batteries. if we will have a flat battery unless we start with ourselves, and then we can extend it to helping other people, or to be feeling compassion for other people. Again, helping sounds patronizing. We can extend it to having compassion for other people, which sometimes can help, but it can also protect ourselves. So RAIN, okay. Often when we feel that our value is hitched to externals, we were talking about this again today, it can cause dukkha. So the core of suffering, it is said in Buddhist psychology, is trance, that we are hooked on our own stories of where we are, and that's a very painful place to be. And within that, we lose self-compassion. When we're in this trance thinking, I don't know about you, David, but when I'm in that state, self-compassion goes out of the window. So I'm going to briefly go through the acronym of RAIN. First of all, the R stands for recognize what's going on. When we are in a situation, when a feeling comes up that's particularly strong, quite often I might say to a client or somebody I'm working with, if you're in a situation, how strong, out of 0 to 10, how strong is it feeling? If it's above a 6, it's not about what's going on right now. This is hooked to something in the past. If it's a 4, say somebody's stepped on your toe and your toe hurts, then it's because your toe hurts. But if somebody has said something, possibly really inconsequential, but it really hurts, that's hooked to something that's gone on in the past. 9 times out of 10. That's where R comes in. That's what we recognize what's going on. Consciously acknowledging in any given moment the thoughts, the feelings, and the behaviors that are affecting us. And this can be done. We can do this with a simple mental whisper of what we're most aware of. So we recognize it. We say, okay, what's going on? And again, I do teach this a lot with people in recovery who go bang into the limbic system and they're furious about something. And then I can ask them to slow down a little bit, say, okay, now really, really, what's going on here? Are you feeling unheard? Are you feeling unacknowledged? Is this jealousy? Is this, you know, that? And we can take it from there. So firstly, it is to recognize. The A is to allow. Now, this one is a big one. To allow the experience. And this takes practice. To be there, to be with it just as it is. And this is letting the thoughts and the emotions, the feelings or sensations simply to be there without, and this is the important thing, without trying to control them or to fix them. There's a huge correlation with helping people in the process of recovery about relinquishing control, attachment to control. Mm-hmm. If we are attach ourselves to control, it doesn't work. Things tend to backfire. And this is about faith.
Yeah.
Faith takes time. And again, this is where meditation can bring us back into that. So, for example, yes, you might recognize fear. Allowing, it creates this place that makes it possible to deepen attention.
Yes.
That's the important thing. So we can bring ourselves to a place where we can deepen our attention, and that obviously is connected with the mindfulness.
If I may jump in there, it sounds very similar to Shantideva's advice in The Way of the Bodhisattva, where he says that at the height of a negative emotion like that or delusion, mental affliction, we should be like a piece of wood.
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah. I really like that analogy, to allow that experience to happen.
Yeah. There is the thing about the being the loving witness of our own lives. I mean, Jack Kornfield is my main guy. He's my teacher, and I've had the great pleasure to work with him on a couple of occasions, and it's just been fabulous. But he talks a lot similarly to being the piece of wood. Yes, because it is to detach from all of it, but also to be the loving witness. So it is an objective rather than a subjective
yes
place to be, which is exactly that, David. The next one, which is less objective, is to investigate. But to investigate, that's the I in RAIN, but it is to investigate with interest and care. So this is more where the loving witness comes in that we're talking about. So this is a call on our natural curiosity. So if we can be, and the word is loving, we need to be the compassionate witness to what's going on. But it is objective, it is witness is the key to it. So we're not actually in it.
Yeah.
The desire to know the truth and to direct a more focused attention to the present experience. So with this, which we're going to attach a meditation to this a little later, but with this one might ask oneself, what now needs my attention? If we're bringing to mind what's hurting, so we're saying, okay, I feel unheard, my heart is hurting, it's to bring compassion to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So within a meditation, it could be, you could then ask yourself, how am I feeling this in my body? You know, as with most of the Vipassana meditation, it's where is this in my body? Where am I feeling this? Where is it hurting most? And also, what am I believing? the story. Mm-hmm. What do I believe? Well, because 9 times out of 10, it's not true.
Yes.
And what does this vulnerable place want from me? What does it most need? So whatever the inquiry, the investigation will be most transformational if we step away from conceptualizing and placing primary attention to the felt sense in the body. That's where the meditation is. Because if we're stepping away from the story and sensing it in our body...
Yes.
That's really what we're talking about with the investigation. So it's not, we're not going into the story, which changes. I mean, if you find... I was speaking to somebody about this the other day and saying, you know, we can be so hung up on a story, we can have a period of time where there's a story where we feel hurt or neglected, and it can feel so strong. We think, I'm never going to forget this. This will always hurt. This never, you know, this will always remain static. And the great joy of Buddhism, what is it? Nothing is the same. Everything exactly. changes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I was bringing to mind with a client an example of something that 2 years ago we'd worked on, that she was saying, I will never move away from this. This will always hurt me. And I'd remembered some of the details of the situation she was talking about. I had to remind her of them. She'd completely forgotten.
Mm.
It had gone.
Yeah. And those moments, you know, where someone, or where we feel someone inflicted pain on us, emotional pain, it happened in that moment.
Yeah.
And every time since that we remember it, it's self-inflicted. And we've also probably changed the story slightly. Every time we retell it to ourselves, it gets that little bit more harsh, and it changes and it twists, and it's not an accurate account of what happened. And even at the time, it wasn't an accurate account, because yeah. it's
kind of filtered through our own conditioning,
isn't it? Yeah.
And this is what in Buddhist psychology, as you know, is the second arrow. You know, something happens that's painful, and we experience the first arrow that shot. The second arrow is the one we shoot at ourselves.
Absolutely.
So often I will say to people, nah, not with the second arrow. Stop the second arrow. Stop it. And we can stop this through mindfulness.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where, and we all do it. It's human condition. We all do it. But when you were talking earlier, we were talking about having a particularly challenging day, and you were saying you were able to laugh at yourself around things when they were happening, rolling on. One of my favourite stories, and this, we need a sense of humour and some kind of the ability to be self-deprecating. I had a story I love with Pema Chodron. It stayed with me, this story. She was sitting, she was meditating. She was in a monastery, she was meditating, and she was having a wonderful, glorious experience with her meditation, and she was feeling great. And a young novice nun walked into the room and disturbed her. And she snapped at her. She was furious. Pema Chodron snapped at this. And in telling the story, she said it was so interesting, because what happened was her ego, she realized she'd been completely an ego within her meditation, had totally been about how great she felt her meditation had been, and then actually it meant nothing if when a young woman had walked in, she'd snapped at her.
I
think I'm trying to assert we're all human. We all get it wrong, and then in comes the imposter syndrome, and then I'll tell the story very quickly. When I told this to you at dinner the other day, actually, when there was one time I was in a particularly bad mood and I was stomping along, feeling horrible with the world. And I said to my then quite young son, he must have been about 11 or 12, I have no right to be teaching any of this. I'm a complete imposter. This is like imposter syndrome full on. And he said, yeah, but Ma, I said, you know, I'm clearly a bad person. I'm so bad tempered. And he said, but Mom, do you believe in what you teach? And I said, 100%. And then he said, then it's fine, then it's not wrong. And he said, and actually, it's quite Buddhist-y, what you just said. I know, so sweet. So there we go. So back to that. So it is, yes, as I said, the investigation, to go back to that, really we're talking about the sense of the investigation is the allowing is to understand the experience. The investigation really is where it's feeling in our body. We try to step away at that point from the story and feel where we are in the body, and then in meditation we can offer ourselves healing to that part. Now, when I had talked about how these teachings have morphed and evolved in the last 20 years, Tara Brach teaches a lot from from Rain. I mean, that's turned into kind of her thing. And the meditation we're going to do later is primarily taken from a meditation that Tara Brach teaches, but it is beautiful. Now, when this began, and I've been interested in this, the way Tara Brach teaches it, for instance, and the way it is generally taught now, the N stands for nurture with self-compassion. Originally, when Michelle McDonald was teaching this, it was about not identifying with the story. And it's about non-attachment. The N for her stood for non-attachment, non-identification. And then I really... and the early Tara Brach teaching around it was around having a natural awareness. She now uses it more as nurture with self-compassion. I choose to use all of those together.
Yeah.
I think that it is very important that N stands for nurture, but it is also very important to me it stands for non-attachment.
Yeah.
That's deeper for me.
Yeah.
A non-attachment, non-identification with the story.
It could be Rain with two N's.
It could be Rain. No. We'll change it. That can be our teaching.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
It's good. So the N, the nurture self-compassion we'll run with. So this basically is self-compassion, which begins to naturally arise at the moments when we recognise we're suffering. And it comes to fullness when we intentionally nurture our inner life with self-care. So basically what that really means is that when we recognize we're suffering, and that's having the awareness around it, it's not just stomping along thinking I've got a big black rain cloud over me and I feel horrible. It's about stopping and thinking, okay, now this hurts. I am in suffering and it's okay to be in suffering. I just would like to find a way through it, which is obviously the entire purpose of the Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path.
Yes, yeah.
bit of a big one to be on there. And then we to do this, we try to sense what the wounded place inside most needs, and then to offer some gesture of actual care that might address this need. And it can be a message of reassurance or forgiveness or recognition. So often when I'm teaching, when I'm doing it, again, when I'm guiding somebody through meditation, I will often say to them in this meditation, the invitation now is to place your hand on your heart and to sense what you need right now. You know, that beautiful thing of the Buddha very often will use the imagery of a mother holding her beloved child. How we hold our own heart is a mother holding her beloved child. And that is where we come in. So that incorporates all the N's, all the no-no-no's.
Yeah.
And there we have Rain. So that is what it is. And basically, trance is when our sense of who we are is shaped by the "there's something wrong with me" feeling. And I think 90% of us walk around with that. No, 99% of us walk around with that feeling, "there's something wrong with me."
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's really what I try. And that gets so intense for some people that that's when they may pick up a substance, which is what I, you know, through my own process of recovery, that is where I have been taken, and that is where I have been offered the most extraordinary opportunities to help.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. And I'm really looking forward. Actually, you said you're going to do that as a guided meditation for us. So if you are listening by way of the podcast, if you skip over to the next podcast, then we'll be able to listen and enjoy that guided meditation with Charlotte. So Charlotte, you have some, you do regular courses and retreats, and I believe you do have one coming up potentially soon.
Yes, indeed I do. I will be doing a retreat in southern Spain in Andalusia towards the end of the summer. The date, probably at the end of August, to be 100% confirmed soon. And in that retreat, I were hoping to be doing some work with David on the retreat. We will have an asana yoga teacher there, somewhere particularly beautiful. We start with morning meditation, then go into some yin yoga for those who wish to do this. David will be doing some talks and meditations on the retreat, and I will do a workshop in the afternoon followed by a meditation which will be linked to the workshop. For instance, say we did Rain, there would be the Rain meditation I'm going to do, something along similar lines to what we've been doing today.
Lovely. And so if you are interested in finding out a bit more about that retreat, you can find more information either on bodhicittalifeworks.com, that's your website.
That's correct.
Or if you search Bodhicitta Lifeworks on Facebook,
yep,
then all the details should come up. Charlotte, I do want to really thank you for this session. It's been really, really lovely. I'm really looking forward to the meditation now.
It's been a great pleasure. I was asking you, David, if I could just finish the podcast with this one particularly beautiful little quote. It's by Pema Chodron, and she's talking about this, about being in that state of trance when we are in our own minds to such an extent we can see very little else. And she says about this, she says, being preoccupied with our self-image is like being deaf and blind. It's like coming upon a tree of singing birds while wearing earplugs.
I want to thank you for listening to this week's podcast. I really hope it's been useful for you. If you engage in the practice of the week, please do let me know how you get on. And if you have any questions also, you can email us at info@samadhi.org.uk, or you can send us a message on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you again real soon.